the phone.
Start the recording. So welcome, and we're really this teleclass has been requested a number of times, and we're really glad to be able to do it tonight.
So we will be talking about interracial and cross-cultural dating and love is the topic, but really in a sense that the essence of it has to do with how do you love somebody who's different than you, which really boils down to how do you love anybody at all?
Yeah.
Because anybody you love is going to be different from you.
And we're going to talk about some very specific skills that we think are important for this, but the truth is these are just sort of, this is the conscious goal friend skills. We're just talking about them in a sort of direct application. But you'll see as we talk about this, these are the same skills that we talk about all the time.
And so for those of you that have been on other calls with us, you're going to be hearing some things that sound very familiar. But for some of you, it might be your first call with us. So we do want to introduce ourselves briefly and tell you a little bit about what we're up to in general.
Yeah, so I'm Michelle Moraine, and I have a background in neuroscience, and also have a very long Buddhist practice, and I went to seminary, and so you've heard those things that weave into our work. I also have a history of you know, various problematic relationships that I learned a lot from.
All happened to be with white women.
Yeah, that's true.
But that
that's
wasn't true. Necessarily why they were problematic.
Exactly. Go ahead.
And Michelle and I are life partners, as many of you know, and we've been together a little over 10 years now, mm-hmm. And my background is in writing. I write poetry, I write nonfiction, and also in transpersonal psychology and hypnotherapy and shamanic work, so I bring a lot of those kinds of understanding and spiritual practice to Conscious Girlfriend. And so together, we like to say that we blend science, psychology, and spirit in our approaches to helping women date more wisely and love better, helping women who love women. And for anybody who is on the phone tonight and who hasn't seen pictures of us, it might also be helpful for this call to know that Michelle is African-American, mm-hmm. and I'm white. We have many other differences as well. She's about a foot taller than me. and various other differences, some of which we might talk about tonight, and some of which I'm sure we won't get to. So that's part of what we'll be bringing tonight is our personal experience from our own interracial relationship, as well as, you know, all the work that we've done with many other women.
And so, you know, we're really glad you're here and you're in the right place, you know, whether or not actually if you've been thinking about dating interracially, interculturally, or you've had relationships with people of other races or cultures.
Or you might be in a relationship right now.
Right.
With someone of another race or culture.
Yep.
And in some sense, you know, I'm really glad if some of you are here who, you know, have never dated somebody of another race or culture and you mm-hmm. might never do it, but you just are here to learn, you know, whatever might apply to you. Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly what we're talking about also applies to transcultural or transracial friendships and other kinds of mm-hmm. connections.
Right.
And as I said earlier, I think it actually applies to all relationships because in one way or another, we're always loving across various kinds of differences.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So,
and one thing, you know, right now, this is a charged time. The topic of race, culture, ethnicity is a hot topic and can be very triggering for some people and can be, it can be very intense. And I think we wanted to create a context and an environment where we could talk about these issues in a way that wasn't charged, that was safe, that was conscious, that was compassionate. And that was sort of why we wanted to do this.
Yeah. It's really about coming from a space of love for us. And so we would offer as a hope that for all of you, this would be a safe environment too. We're going to be speaking, you know, very honestly about our own experience. And it's certainly not about political correctness. It's not about, you know, doing everything right, knowing everything, which none of us can do. Mm-hmm. So we really want to create a space that feels open and encouraging and in a way maybe demystifying or, you know, de-escalating of the fear. I think, you know, sometimes we hear women say, you know, well, I would never want to date somebody of another race because it would be just too hard. But we also hear women say, well, I never want to be in another relationship at all because it would be just too hard. You know, I think those of us that have had relationships with members of our own racial and cultural group know that, guess what? Those relationships have their challenges too. So, yeah, so we really want to make this an accessible and welcoming and encouraging and supportive atmosphere tonight. And of course, we also want to hear your wisdom. Your experiences and, you know, your struggles and your triumphs and, and, you know, just whatever you would like to share, because it's also always a chance for us to come together in this mutual teaching and learning environment on these calls.
And, you know, no question. I mean, any question that you have, please, please ask it. You know, no questions out of bounds.
Are we going to save questions to the end?
Yeah, I think we'd like to save questions to the end. And then, so we'll speak and then we'll have lots of time for questions, I think. And so we want to start out with an example that I think we've used a number of times in various things.
To illustrate a certain kind of cultural difference. Which may or may not come along with any other recognizable racial or cultural difference.
And that is how you like to be treated when you get sick. So I am somebody, when I get sick, I just want to hole up in my room alone, be left alone to read or sleep or do whatever. And just, that's what I like.
She doesn't want the chicken soup.
I don't want the chicken soup.
She doesn't
want
to be waited on.
You know, whereas Ruth is a little different.
Yeah, a little different. I wouldn't say I'm like a major please wait on me person, but I do like to be doted on a little bit. You know, it's certainly one of those things where it's nice if she offers and I don't have to ask. You know, can I get you something? What do you need? You know, and that's not how Michelle is. I mean, it's not how she natively is on either side of the equation. You know, so she's not necessarily going to think of asking me those questions. And but I don't know that she necessarily wants me doting on her either, even though I might tend to try.
And so what's important about this difference is that the way that we navigate it and the way that other couples might navigate it is to be conscious of how each, how, what our natural inclinations are, to know that the other person doesn't necessarily have those same natural inclinations, and to be able to communicate that without telling stories. You know, like, you know, if I, if all I say to her is, oh, do you need anything? She won't make a story of, oh my gosh, she doesn't love me enough to dote on me, right? Or, you know, if I make a story, if I'm like feeling like I want to be alone and she's going to come bring me soup and bring me orange juice and keep kind of bothering me, I'll be like, she's going, oh no, you know, she's like, she's wanting to smother me, right? And so I think part of the story, part of this challenge is to sort of disconnect from those stories.
And and this is actually a topic that is, I mean, there's so many topics that are loaded, right? But this topic of how does somebody else care for you when you're sick actually is one that we hear come up a lot, you know, where there's a lot of charge around it when we bring it up in workshops, because women are quick, people are quick to, you know, if somebody isn't there for you in the way that you want when you feel vulnerable, it's very easy for many of us to think, oh, it's because she doesn't love me. You know, there's a there's a kind of a collapse inside that we can go into where it's like, oh my God, she just isn't there for me in this way that I need. Oh my God, she just doesn't get me and she never will. You know, and that's, if you ever catch yourself thinking that kind of thing, that's a story. That's what what we mean by not going into story, is instead kind of cultivating a curiosity of like, oh, there's something happening here that, you know, maybe isn't what I want or isn't what I expect. I wonder what's up with that.
Right.
As opposed to, I know what's up with that and it's that she doesn't love me.
And so we're bringing this up, you know, the thing is that, you know, neither of those inclinations, neither the inclination to be left alone or the inclination to be doted on, is something that's gonna, that has any societal overlay, right? There's no, you know,
systematic discrimination
based upon how you like to be treated when you're sick, right? And so there is an additional overlay when it comes to race or culture or class, for instance. And so there is an additional piece to it. But the truth is, the bottom line is the way, and we're going to go into much more detail, but the bottom line is the way that you deal with that difference is very much the same. It's just an additional awareness that you need to have about the cultural, about the societal overlay, the sort of, you know, system of oppression overlay. But it's very much the same thing about having curiosity, not jumping to making stories, and such.
And having room to both make mistakes and allow the other person that you're with to make mistakes, right. Not expecting mind reading. You know, and I think, again, that whenever topics are charged or painful, most of us tend to go to a place. I know I go to this place, and I have many, many times, where it's like, I just want her to know what it's like for me. Mm-hmm. I just want her to know what I need without mm-hmm. my having to say. I just want her to get it. And it's a very familiar place. I think probably most of you or all of you can relate to the pain of that, you know, when you don't feel gotten. And yet it is so universal in human relationships that we, you know, when we're going to continue to have relationships with people, we need to find ways to really be compassionate mm-hmm. with that pain when it comes up for us. Yes. And also with the fact that people are going to,
right.
People aren't going to know.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of things people aren't going to know about you. And some of them may have to do with racial and cultural mm-hmm. differences. And of course, some of them won't.
So we have an excerpt of a poem by Pat Parker that we want to read.
Some of you who are our age or older probably remember Pat Parker. She was a poet, a lesbian feminist poet in the 70s.
And the title of the poem is "For the White Person Who Wants to Know How to Be My Friend." And it's just an excerpt of the poem. "The first thing you need to do is to forget that I'm black. Second, you must never forget that I'm black. You should be able to dig Aretha, but don't play her every time I come over. And if you decide to play Beethoven, don't tell me his life story. They made us take music appreciation too."
So I think that's cute, because I don't think I ever had to take music appreciation. So I would love it if you played Beethoven and told me his life story. Uh-huh. But the part that I, when we were talking about this class, those first two lines I have always remembered, because the first time I heard them, I just got something mm-hmm. very profound about, you know, first you must forget that I'm black, second you must never forget that I'm black. And I think that's a kind of the paradox mm-hmm. that we're holding when mm-hmm. we talk about these things. And I see some of you nodding, so I'm glad that makes sense.
Yeah. And so let's just go through what skills are really important to bring to bear in making an interracial or intercultural relationship work. And again, as we said initially, these are skills that are just, they're basically conscious girlfriend skills. We're talking about them in a specific mm-hmm. context, but you'll see they're really very much the same. Mm-hmm. And so the first thing that we already talked about was dismantling our stories. Mm-hmm. And what we have this example about my hair.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So, you want to basically start with that one?
Oh, sure. Sure. So the other day, well, we have these beautiful sheep that live down the road from us, and I love the sheep, and they don't get shorn. I guess it's too expensive to shear sheep these days. So they're, you know, they have this very, very, very long, thick wool. And so then the other day when Michelle got her hair cut, I was touching her hair and I was saying, "Oh, your wool is shorter now." And, you know, and I was kind of making this analogy to her hair and the sheep's wool. And then I said, "Wow, do you think that's racist? Mm-hmm. Like, did that bother you?"
Right. And it didn't bother me. I mean, it's I like sheep. And the truth is that's sort of how my hair is, right? And but I could have totally said, "Oh, my God, you know, she's like, comparing me to an animal or whatever." I mean, I could have made all sorts of assumptions about what she was saying and why she was saying it that wouldn't have been true, because I know she likes sheep a lot. I mean, a lot. She likes sheep a lot.
And you know I like you a lot.
And I know she likes me a lot. And also I know that, you know, because I know her, there's an innocence there too. I mean, it's just like, it really is an innocent comment. And and so
well, what would happen if it did bother you?
Well, that's that I would have to, I would talk about that. I would say, wow, you know, I want you to know that when I heard you say that, I felt a little fluttering in my stomach, and I was afraid that maybe you were, I don't know how I would put this, maybe that you were looking down on me because of my hair.
Mm.
So that would be, and then how would you respond to that?
Say, wow, well, I'm really glad you told me that. I wasn't thinking of it as looking down at you. I was just, I love your hair and I love the texture of it. It's fun to touch. Mm-hmm. And, but yeah, I can see how that comment could have sounded weird, you know, coming from somebody with a different texture hair, you know?
Yeah. So again, that's a conscious girlfriend conversation, right? I mean, that's, and the other, the thing that sort of leads into this is the issue about allowing ourselves and each other to make mistakes. And so it could be that, you know, it could have been that was an unconscious comment on her part, that it was, and that if I have sensitivity to it, she's like, oh, realizing, oh, wow, this is something that is sensitive for her. And I leave space for that, you know, for that mistake. And I think mistakes are different than, you know, if I had said what I just said about, wow, I feel fluttering in my stomach and I'm feeling afraid that maybe, you know, you're sort of looking down on me for my hair. If she had dismissed that or had, you know, come back with some other comment that was critical or in some way not open, not curious, not compassionate, well, that's a big red flag if you're dating somebody, or, you know, if you're in a relationship with someone.
Right. And that's the basic problem, no matter who you're with, is if somebody isn't able to hear you and respond. But it's also, you know, I think what you're demonstrating and how you said it is it's a particular formula that we teach about how to tell the inarguable truth, which starts with a body sensation and then goes to a feeling, usually a feeling of vulnerability. And the reason why we teach that formula is because we find that it tends to, it gets you in contact with your own body sensations, so it helps you get less triggered, and B, it's less likely to trigger defensiveness in somebody else, because if you're speaking about, oh, I've got this fluttering in my stomach, and I have this fear, it's very different. Like if in a different role play, if you just said to me, how could you say that? That was such a racist thing to say.
Right. Yes.
I mean, then I would be, you know, freaked out and, I think it would be hard for us to connect.
Yes. Yes. And I think also, I mean, you know, one thing that comes to mind as we're talking is that I do think that it's sometimes hard for us, for me as an African American woman, to feel vulnerable around the issue of race. But that's something that is a challenge for me, and that's a skill that I've slowly been able to develop, is to be able to speak about these things in a way that can show my vulnerability. To understand that's something that is sometimes a challenge for people.
And you mean because if you don't go to vulnerability, what do you go to?
I personally go to shutdown. Some people go to just like anger or the kind of, you know, sort of the,
right.
Like, how could you say that? That's a horrible thing to say,
right,
or whatever.
Right. And again, this is a dynamic that happens between people, regardless of whether they have racial or cultural differences. It's a dynamic that we teach about a lot, where, you know, when we get triggered and we go into fight or flight, sometimes the fear looks like anger.
Right.
It looks like I gotta put you down.
Right.
I gotta make myself right and you wrong because I'll feel safer when I do that. And, you know, it's tricky to talk about this with race because, of course, I mean, we both feel very strongly that it's important to, you know, to cultivate non-racism and anti-racism.
Sorry.
And yet at the same time, I think the way to do that is with compassion and self-compassion. Because when we go right into anger and telling somebody else that they're wrong, I mean, even in a case where somebody has said something really problematic, it's, well, you talked about this, about what happened to you in that church meeting.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that one thing that I've learned is that the ability to handle my own triggers around race and ultimately to know my own worth. I mean, it's back to being really clear about my own worth as a human being, as a wonderful person, as a good, you know, as somebody who's lovable. That allows me
as a person,
yes,
too.
And that allows me to actually be able to handle the trigger and to be able to speak more skillfully. Because as we say a lot, that when we get triggered, our cognitive or conscious mind is offline, and getting untriggered is the way to be able to speak more skillfully. And so I've learned to be able to, oh, wow, that's a trigger and I'm feeling scared about this thing, and I don't have to shut down, because that's my thing, is shutting down. I can actually slow down, breathe, remember that I'm lovable, remember that I am of value. Mm-hmm. And then I can speak in a way that's skillful. Mm-hmm. So that's that part of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So where's our outline?
I don't know where it went. It flew away somewhere.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll fly with that outline.
Yes. So another, I mean, back to the other skills, is the question about, so there's the dismantling your own stories. There's the being allowing.
There it is.
Oh, thank you. There's allowing each other to make mistakes. We are both, I mean, even though, you know, I'm black, she's white, she's Jewish, I'm Christian, we are universes unto ourselves. We're different people in many different ways. And we're also similar in many ways. We actually got a question before this call about differences in coming out culture. And I don't know if it's surprising, but we actually came out in the same culture. We both came out
in the 80s
in the lesbian feminist culture. And so we have that shared culture.
And we both sort of lean toward the alternative hippie type, you know,
right,
progressive,
right,
a little bit non-mainstream sort of bent.
Yes.
So
yes.
I think in that sense, we are actually much more culturally alike than if you were, you know, corporate, you know,
right,
high success,
right,
powered,
right,
you know, work within the lines,
right,
kind,
yes,
of person,
yes,
for instance.
Yes, that's true.
Or
that's true.
If I were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, I think, you know, one example that we like to use, I grew up in a Jewish neighborhood, most of my childhood, and, teenagehood in a community that was 95% Jewish. And we like to joke that sometimes I know as much or more Yiddish as Ruth does.
Well, actually, we say she's more Jewish than I am.
Yeah.
Now, what would be really interesting is if I had grown up in a community that was 95% black and she had grown up in the 95% Jewish community, but then we're walking around in the bodies that,
right,
we walk around in.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess the bottom line is that our experiences are so individual. And so a lot of the knack is, and I think this goes back to, first, you must forget that I'm black. Second, you must never forget that I'm black. A lot of the knack is hearing what the other person's experiences are and understanding that, you know, her race and her culture are, mm-hmm, part of where those experiences have come from, mm-hmm, but not assuming that those are the reason why she had those experiences,
right,
or that she had particular experiences.
Yeah. And there's a great example about my mother, which my, uh-huh, parents came to visit, and we live in a pretty rural area. Well, my parents live in the suburbs, right? So it's, and my mom, we were talking about taking her tour. It was sort of night.
We were driving around these beautiful country roads, you know, up in the wine country. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought her parents would enjoy this beautiful drive. And
my mom was nervous about driving in the country roads at night.
She was actually going in her mind to, what if the car breaks down? And she said, well, I figured we'd have to send Ruth to the person's door because, you know, the three of us, they might shoot.
Right.
And I don't think she said they might shoot, but no, I got
but
that was...
that was, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I mean, of course, the truth is we all have cell phones, so nobody would actually even have to go to somebody's door. We have AAA. You know, we live in a very progressive area where I don't think that kind of violence is likely to happen. And yet at the same time, when she said that, I totally got, okay, mm-hmm. this is coming out of a very profound experience mm-hmm. that is not something that I've ever had to deal with. You know, I walk around in the world as a white person. I don't ever have to think, is somebody going to shoot me if mm-hmm. I go to their door because mm-hmm. my car broke down? Mm-hmm. You know?
And so there, just like with other things, but I think that there's a little bit of an added layer again, of Ruth's willingness to really understand that my experience and my parents' experience is different, and to really grok that and to be willing to embrace that difference of experience, and to know that when I walk into a department store, which I never do, but anyway,
if I were ever to,
you know, I would be treated differently than she, and she knows that, and she understands that deeply. And that's an important piece. And I think I would like all conscious girlfriends to be able to walk around, no matter what our races are, no matter what our cultural backgrounds are, being able to say, oh, you know, she experiences the world differently than I do. What is that like? And how can I understand that? But it's hard to do. But it's a skill that you can build.
Yeah. Just that really cultivating that curiosity. Mm-hmm. What are the forces that have shaped her? What lens does she look through? And also, what are the forces that have shaped me? What lens do I look through? You know, I also had a long relationship with a woman who was una puertorriqueña. She was Puerto Rican. And she grew up in Puerto Rico. So she came to the U.S. when she was about 20. But her experience was very different because she didn't grow up feeling like, you know, a person of color or part of an ethnic minority. She grew up a Puerto Rican in Puerto Rico. Everybody was Puerto Rican, you know, so she wasn't discriminated against for being Puerto Rican. But she and I did have some real cultural differences that came up, like some very, very different patterns around friendship in particular that we really had to learn to identify and work with. And then later on when she went to grad school, she said, this is why. It's because, you know, Puerto Rico is a sociocultural society. And, you know, that was why she would tend to get together with her friends in big groups, and they would sing and they would play music and they would have lots of food, and it was all kind of group socializing. Whereas my friendship pattern was much more getting together with friends one-on-one. And so when she and I were first together and I would want to go spend time with one of my friends one-on-one, she was really hurt. Like, you know, why would mm-hmm. I do that? Why mm-hmm. wouldn't I include her? Mm-hmm. You know, so that was a case where we both had to learn to, you know, find out how the other one saw the world and, you know, not make up stories about it, but come with curiosity.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, you know, all of this involves and requires a willingness to learn and grow, because none of this is static. You know, I'm not going to, you know, Ruth is not going to learn everything about what it's like to be me and live in my body in this world. And I'm not going to learn everything that's like to be her and living in her body in this world. It's going to take time, and it's going to be something that we're constantly going to be learning more about and growing more about. And so having that willingness to continue this process of conversation, of discovery, of curiosity, of growing is an essential skill as well.
And I was thinking about, you know, why is it that I've had, like, my two longest relationships have actually been with women of color? And I think, to me, part of the answer to that is because I really like to learn.
Mm.
And I like to grow. And I like to have more understanding of more of the world. And having an intimate relationship with someone is a tremendous way to learn about the world mm-hmm. through mm-hmm. their eyes mm-hmm. and, mm-hmm. you know, through their passions and their mm-hmm. fears and their mm-hmm. experience. Mm-hmm. I think another piece of it is that my family was kind of unusual and unconventional, and I'm kind of a little odd myself. And so even if I had a relationship with somebody that sort of looked just like me demographically, I wouldn't necessarily feel like they were very much like me. Mm-hmm. So that might be another part of it. And Michelle and I actually are very similar in some deep ways.
Yeah.
This is something else I wanted to say again, because I know that there is a lot of fear, among people of all races of fear of coming up against the difference if you're with somebody not of your race. And so I really wanted to say that I think it can be a wonderful way to learn, and enriching and heart-opening, and just one more way you get to find out, I don't know about some of you, but I feel like I'm on this planet to try to understand more about the human experience, all the different ways it plays out. Mm-hmm. So I like that aspect of being with somebody who's different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah.
And, also she's like a scientist and she's a geek. She's a technology person. Yeah. She's different from me culturally, interest-wise. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, that comes in pretty handy, too.
Yeah. Oh, that's, we're having the sun
again.
Oh,
yeah. Here we are.
So actually we were going to tell a little bit, you sort of already talked a little bit about your history.
Yeah.
I was going to tell a little bit of story. It's sort of a not as happy story about an interracial relationship. I had many of you who are on this call have also heard about this relationship, that I had in the 90s, with a woman who I often call Mary, which was, a very problematic relationship. It was, emotionally abusive. Eventually it was physically abusive. And one thing that was interesting about it was that she, sort of an example that you brought up, she actually did grow up in the Bronx, in an area that was largely African-American. She grew up poor, basically poor, working class. And so we had a sort of interesting difference. And what happened was...
Because you grew up with more privilege.
Because I grew up with more privilege than she did.
Uh-huh.
And so what happened was that we... she was actually good at making me feel guilty about things. And I was somebody who always wanted to appreciate people's differences, and I wanted to understand more about what was like for her growing up poor and working class. I knew that was a different experience for her. It was a different sort of way of being. But what ended up happening was that she ended up using that as a cudgel to beat me with. Her class difference and sort of like going, there's the sort of hierarchy of suffering, her suffering was worse than my suffering, which was not, that was not something that was very healthy.
So I think the moral of the story is when you're loving somebody or trying to love somebody and wanting to be loved in return, it's always good not to use anything as a cudgel to beat them with. beating and being beaten are not, perhaps in very specific sexual context, if you both agree, we'll make an exception for that. But in general, it's love is really about this openness, this willingness to look with curiosity and compassion at our own experience and at the other person's experience without trying to make either of us right or wrong. Mm-hmm. And that's the atmosphere that we think creates the kind of, safety.
Right, exactly. And I think it's possible for, no matter what the cultural class, ability, race difference there is, if you have curiosity and you have compassion and you can speak responsibly, you can navigate those differences and you can learn about each other and you can have your lives enriched, both of your lives enriched by those differences. That's our perspective. So, yeah.
And we could talk a lot more and tell lots of stories, but I would love to hear from you all and just hear like what your stories are, what your questions are.
Yeah.
We
want to sort of have a conversation, about this and any comments or things you have to add, we'd love to hear.
So for those of you that are on the phone, if you want to speak, you press *6 to unmute yourself. And if you're on the computer, you have the little icon in the lower left of your screen, or you can also use the chat
and chat your question or your comment. So yeah, we'd love to hear what you have to say.
They're all being very quiet. Have to keep talking.
Yeah.
Hi, ladies.
Hi, Monica.
I just want to let you know, identify as Hispanic Latino, but I'm Caucasian, but many Hispanic Latinos are cinnamon or Afro-Latino. Mm-hmm. And it seems like that my best friend is cinnamon. And, you know, I know that you're, if I could say so, Ruth, you seem like you're a cinnamon. So, ultimately, I remember reading somewhere that 87% of people that identify as African American have another race in them, and 75% of people that identify as Caucasian, they have another race in them.
So, Monica,
we're all multiracial.
I get what you're saying, Monica, but I think it's also important to distinguish that. We actually had our 23andMe gene stuff done, and Michelle, of course, is not 100% African American.
71% actually.
Was something like 96% Ashkenazi Jewish.
You were like 98% or something.
My skin tone is kind of olive Mediterranean looking, but what we're really talking about here is not skin tone. What we're talking about is perception. And, institutionalized social structures. And I think the way that this society is right now, unfortunately, when most people look at Michelle, one of the first things they're going to see, if not the first, is that she's black. And when most people look at me, they're most likely going to think I'm white. I mean, occasionally somebody wonders if I'm Native American or something else. But, in general, I'm perceived as white. And that does come along with it gives me
believe in what
kinds of safety
ears,
and privilege.
What counts?
What'd you say?
What's between the ears is what counts. I've only dated one person of color in my life. It was just one day, and there was no chemistry at all.
Uh-huh.
Even a friendship didn't develop. Mm-hmm. And I just have a question here. I am attracted to Filipinos because I love the culture, because it's a very gentle, loving culture. Is that okay for me to explore a culture like the Filipino culture, because I don't have lesbian community here, and I'm thinking about getting involved as an admirer to the Filipino culture. And then my last question would be, I'm also exploring about open relationships. Maybe I have a better chance of finding someone if I'm willing to share that person. Can you have true emotional intimacy in an open relationship?
Okay, this is a number of different questions. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think it's great to be drawn to different cultures and to admire other cultures and learn about those cultures. I think the only caveat would be that you don't kind of fetishize people from that culture.
Right.
That's the only problem that we sometimes see, is when somebody is kind of, exclusively or largely attracted to people of a different race, of one particular race, and if it feels a little bit like it's kind of an othering, like then they're, if you were just going to see her as a Filipina rather than being curious about the whole of who she is. But I don't think that's what you're talking about. So that's the only concern that I would raise.
They seem to have more traditional values.
I mean, I do think...
And I have very traditional values.
One thing that's really important, I think, is to not expect that somebody who has a certain cultural background
is going to be a certain way. Right.
Because they're not. I mean, it's like, there's stereotypes, and there's things that groups of people share, but everybody really is their own universe, and you never really know, I guess really what I want to say, don't make any assumptions about what the person is just based upon what their culture is, because it's just not,
What do you think about open relationships? I have two lesbian friends of mine that have an open relationship, and each partner has their own circle, and they're each other's main squeeze.
Mm-hmm.
Can you find love there?
I absolutely, if that's something that you want to do, I would caution you against opening yourself up to an open relationship just because you think you're more likely to find somebody that way. I don't think that's necessarily true. And I also don't think it's a recipe for happiness to open yourself up to a kind of relationship if it's not what you want, just because you think that's how you'll find somebody. But that said, I think absolutely, you know, you can have great emotional intimacy or the lack of it in a monogamous or in a polyamorous relationship. It's just different kinds of work involved. So, you know, if you're drawn to have open relationships, absolutely bring these skills.
I never thought of it before, but I'm exploring it.
Uh-huh. Great. Okay.
I'm getting older. I'm 58 and I really just don't really feel I have a lot of time.
Uh-huh.
Unfortunately. And I just had, I'll just say one very quickly. I just had I'm very proud of myself. I had a long distance telephone relationship, if you can call it that, where, and she and I mutually agreed. We thought cleanly and we spoke cleanly. It was just too far. We're both disabled, 6.5 hours by train. Mm. And it would have killed me. And she's in a situation where she wants someone to live with her, contribute financially to her situation. She's even more poor than I am, and then wants someone to co-parent her disabled child. Mm-hmm. And because of my disability, I can't give her all that she needs and wants.
Mm-hmm.
And so we mutually decided, you know, to not even go any further with it.
Mm-hmm. 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 Well, that sounds like the right choice based on what each of you needs. So I'm glad for you that you made that choice. You know,
it was mutual.
In terms of being 58 and feeling like you don't have much time left, I can tell you we have a lot of women on this call that are considerably older than that. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had women taking our classes that were up to 80. We've had women emailing us. There was one woman that emailed us and said she was 96. She didn't like to tell people how old she was.
Wow.
Because that, you know, would always shock them. But I actually think that those of us that are mid-50s and over have a tremendous advantage because we're part of the baby boom. Mm-hmm. And there are actually an awful
lot of baby boomers.
There's a ton of women around right now in our later 50s and 60s and beyond who are single and wanting to use these kinds of skills. So you definitely don't have to worry about it being too late at 58. So we have
Sarah.
So
I'll read it. One of the things I found challenging in cross-cultural relationships is different social standards around being out. The risks and dangers of being out can be very different. Any thoughts about how to manage that other than avoiding relationships with women who feel they cannot be out in their cultural context? It's a mm-hmm. great question.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think cultural context or not, in terms of, because I've talked to many women who their not being out isn't actually about their cultural context. It's just about that their person, maybe it's their personal family, their particular family is very conservative. And I think navigating that particular issue about outness is always a difficult one. And I would kind of maybe separate out the cultural part from the out part. I think it is, if you are somebody who's out and been out for a long time and, you know, and that's something you're used to living that way and you wish to continue to live that way, that being in a relationship with somebody who can't be out for whatever reason it is going to be hard to navigate. And you have to be willing to accept that, that they can't be out. And the sun is totally in the way.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. You have to accept that they can't be out and deal with whatever feelings come up within you and navigate consciously together about what that life looks like together without that person being out.
And I think with any difference that comes up between people, oh, that's good. Yeah, you just sit right there.
Yeah.
You know, with any difference that comes up, it's always a question of, you know, does this match my relationship vision or closely enough?
Right.
You know, can I stretch in these ways or is this stretch just too much for me? You know, we always have to be able to look at that. And that's why in our matchmaking program, for instance, we give women, you know, 3 to 5 must-haves that they get to write out and 3 to 5 deal breakers that they get to write out. And we tell them to assume that people have the basic skills we call the catch skills, which are, you know, the compassion and self-compassion and the ability to work with feelings and communicate without blame or self-blame and, you know, willingness to learn and grow and all that stuff. You know, we say, okay, take that as a given, and then you get to name, you know, a small number of other things that are requirements for you and a small number of other things that are total deal breakers for you. And so, for instance, if for you being fully out and having a partner who's fully out is a must-have, then that's something that you just have to know about yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, if that's absolutely key to you, then avoiding dating people that are not out and don't feel able to come out, whatever their race, makes sense. Mm-hmm. But if it's something that you have room to flex on, you know, and it might, being dating somebody that wasn't out to her family might bring up some pain, but it's also a place where you'd be willing to grow, mm-hmm. You know, and willing to learn about how the world is through her eyes, you know, then I think that you would navigate that difference the mm-hmm. same way that we're talking about navigating all these other kinds of differences. Does that make sense?
And I think, I mean, again, it's about assumption too. I mean, I think that, I mean, I've talked to a variety of women who aren't out, and there are many, many, many reasons why they're not out. And some of them are family and cultural, and some of them are not. And it does seems to be independent of cultural mm-hmm. race. Mm-hmm. So
other questions.
Yeah, other questions,
other people's experiences that you've had in dating people of other races or thinking about it or being in relationships or other cultures. Is that a hand raised there?
I think maybe Judith is trying to, I'll unmute you. I'll unmute you.
Okay.
No. Happened? Oh, yeah, there
yes.
you go.
Okay, you're unmuted, Judith.
Yeah, there you go, Judith.
Okay. All right, thanks. So I've been dating a black woman who lives in D.C., and I live many states north of there. And we actually met at Michigan and got to know each other, and we just started dating a couple months ago. And one question that one difference of perspective that has come up for us is we're both parents. We each have a child who's between 18 and 21. Mm-hmm. But she has a son, I have a daughter, and it seems that we have very different relationships with our children, but even more so kind of different expectations of how having a child and entering into a relationship might impact, or, mm-hmm. you know, how to negotiate or manage that as, you know, as far as the child's reaction and mm-hmm. place mm-hmm. in this change in the family mm-hmm. system. Mm-hmm. And, you know, her sense is that part of that is cultural, mm-hmm. that she has different expectations culturally than I do. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably true. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder if you can offer some insights on, you know, in that area, mm-hmm. How to, not only how to talk it through, but also, you know, what expectations might make sense, or what mm-hmm. the range of expectations you've seen, and how does being mm-hmm. I mean, we're, you know, being a lesbian parent. In her mm-hmm. case, her child mm-hmm. came from a heterosexual relationship. In my case, my child was adopted mm-hmm. Into a, you know, a lesbian relationship, but her mm-hmm. other mom and I share co-parenting, and it's been well over 10 years since we were mm-hmm. Lovers.
Mm-hmm. 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 I guess my question is there... so there's a difference in expectation and a difference in sort of approach, but where has the rub mm-hmm. been? I mean, where's there been...
What's the challenge?
What's the challenge, would you say?
Okay. The Chris goofed up in terms of my schedule and invited her to come visit to arrive like the day before my daughter's dance recital, which for my daughter is a very important just family time. But kind of the hall question. So, my daughter is at college, but her home with me is really important to both of us. And I know I brought some fear into it because the relationship I had right after I split up with my partner, starting at 6 months or a year after, that is to say her mom, that relationship, she hated and still hates that woman who I haven't even seen for 5 years. So it's like, okay, if my daughter is not interested in being around at all when the woman I'm maybe let's assume that we are building a relationship.
Right.
We have made a long, we're still in the exploratory stages. But, if my daughter doesn't like my partner or doesn't want my new partner to be around when, say, she's, an event that's special to her, or it's important to my daughter to have sometimes when myself and her other lesbian mom spend time together with her. And
so where's the conflict? I mean, I hear your concern for your daughter's feeling.
Okay, so the conflict is the woman I'm, I guess we could say, dating, exploring a relationship with a capital R with, is, as I understand it, she has two concerns. One is, she, and I wish, unfortunately, she couldn't make the call, otherwise she could speak for herself, but, one is just kind of respect and politeness and, I'm the parent. This is my partner. My daughter should be polite and present and not, run off just because she's there and not, and that my partner, the time with my partner or what my partner and I want to do together should not have to dance around what my daughter might want.
It sounds like the issues are different perspectives of how to sort out these priorities and different perspectives of how a parent would be with the child that are coming up against each other, right?
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, the challenge is, of course, you can't, I mean, your daughter is an adult, right? And so she's got, her own agenda and her own way of doing things. You have your own perspective about it. I think being clear about, I mean, both of you sort of being clear about this is what's happening. These are your perspectives and being willing to look at what's coming up for you, what's coming up for your, the potential relationship person that, what's coming up for her about what's happening with your daughter, her to be able to express that, her emotions about that.
And going to the emotional level is key.
That's
Because because what I was hearing from you, although you didn't quite say it this way, but what I think I was hearing was some fear.
Yes.
That you really want your daughter and your partner, if this woman becomes your partner, to be able to like each other and integrate with each other. And so it sounds like there might be a real fear for you, like, hey, if I do this wrong, if I start out on the wrong foot with my daughter, she'll hate this woman who's going to be my partner, and that's not what I want. So there's fear. Am I reading that correctly?
Yes, there's certainly that piece.
And okay. And
one realization I've come to over the course of the last month is I have not yet told my daughter that I've been dating. You know, I didn't tell her I took the conscious girlfriend class. I've been on dating online, you know, like Match.com for several years. I haven't met anyone that I was got as involved, you know, that I was seriously exploring a relationship with over the long term. But I haven't even told her that I've been dating. So I'm thinking I need to have that discussion with my daughter, separate from the discussion of, oh, I might be dating this particular woman who I might meet in a month or two.
And again, you get to spend some time compassionately with yourself and with your feelings and with what might make it feel hard or scary to talk to your daughter about dating, you know, and then dating this woman in particular and having her visit. And because I think when we try to go at things from the angle of, well, whose way of being is right or better,
right?
Or even when we say, okay, well, there's cultural differences. There's, you know, the woman you're dating has one set of cultural expectations about how you should be with your daughter and you have another one. I mean, that's true, but it doesn't get us very far to acknowledge it as a cultural difference. And that's why what we really emphasize is sort of diving underneath the surface to what are the emotions? What are the vulnerable emotions that and each of you might be feeling in this situation?
When you
and how can you talk on that level about that?
Right. Because when you can talk at that level, that's where you can get joint understanding, where you can understand her perspective, where she can understand your perspective. And that's the place where you can find the avenues to negotiate how to deal with this particular issue. And if you deal with it up here, you're going to always be kind of, you know, going across purposes.
Right. I mean, my guess might be, you know, and again, this obviously is something you have to find out, but my guess might be that the woman that you're dating might have her own fear about, you know, is there going to be a place for her in your life? Or are you going to be having to try to keep her and your daughter separate? And that, you know, for many people, that could bring up all kinds of issues about belonging, or am I not good enough? Or, you know, is there room for me? Or, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And so, again, when you dive in, it's like, okay, what's the fear I'm having here? What's the fear you're having here? How can we just share those fears compassionately so we really hear each other? That, in our experience, when you do it, whatever the conflict, you know, and whether the person is, you know, the same race and cultural background as you or different, when you can, you're both speaking from like that place of vulnerability and fear, that opens up compassion for each other. And then it's like, oh yeah, we're on the same side. We both just want everybody to get along. We both want, you know, to love and be loved and have there be, you know, room for our relationship and all of that, you know, and then that can help melt away the feeling of like, well, she's got this perspective and I've got this perspective and they're just different. And so then it, when you're at that level, it can feel kind of insurmountable.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's helpful. Great. Yeah.
Wonderful. Okay, so Karen has a question.
Do you have anything to share about a Christian dating woman of a different Christian faith? What challenges might come up? Yeah, theology. Totally. I mean, I think that people, you know, whether it's a Christian and a different kind of Christian, or whether it's a Christian and a Buddhist, or a Christian and a Jew, or whatever, I mean, those differences in belief systems can be like cultural differences. And I think, again, the willingness to be curious, to get curious about what's going on, to get curious about, you know, I can imagine a situation where you're dating somebody or you're getting involved with somebody who has a different theology, and there's some fear that comes up about that difference for you. Or, you know, that there's to talk, again, talking at that emotional level, about what comes up for you when you sort of encounter those differences, the places in which you encounter them. And what happens if you both want to go to different churches? You know, how do you navigate that? And what comes up for you when you talk about that possibility? So that's, it's again, I think, I guess our lesson, or our sort of the point of this is that we can talk about all sorts of differences. You talk about race or culture or class or differences in different, conservative versus liberal, Jews or whatever, and they all boils down to compassion, curiosity, dismantling our stories. We do have to pay attention to those cultural overlays, the ways in which some of us are treated differently culturally. That is an additional piece to add to it, but ultimately it's all the same stuff.
So, Karen, are there particular differences that you're concerned about in this scenario or that you've dealt with in the past? I worship on Saturday.
Right. So yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what does that mean in terms of if you're dating somebody who worships on Sunday and you worship on Saturday, what is the concern that comes up for you around that? Not sure.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's what I would suggest that you look into more is just, what would be the fear that would come up around that difference? Because that's, there's something there for you, whether it's a story you're telling yourself about what she might think or, a fear about what you might think or, we have so much stuff running around in our brains about, better than or less than or not as good as or,
I do think, I guess this is back a little bit to the social and cultural overlay. I do think that some people have been brought up to think that, that our group, whatever that our is not necessarily better, but just that you should stay within your group, that you should sort of, date within your race or date within your group, whatever that might be. That might be something that was really inculcated in you as a child. And so there might be fear around that. It's like, this is something, the message you've gotten over and over again as a kid. Oh, you don't go outside.
It's not safe to be with someone who's different.
And so to just examine it, well, is that part of the fear that's coming up? Oh, that's sort of, so it's again, it's back to the underneath, what are the stories that you might be telling about that? Oh,
Yeah. And Karen, since you were at the workshop that we gave a couple weeks ago, you were there with the questions, like the Byron Katie questions, is this true? Mm-hmm. Is it absolutely true? What happens to me when I believe that this is true? Who would I be without the story? So whatever fears are coming up for you about dating somebody of a different faith, I would definitely suggest, you can do some great work with that, even if it's all hypothetical, you can do a lot of spelunking around and find out more about what's coming up for you and then work with it that way. Great.
Yeah.
Other questions?
Yeah, other questions or comments or experiences people would like to share? You can unmute yourself for *6 if you're on a phone.
Was that a hand over there?
Hand. Hey.
Yes.
Trina. Hey, oh, Trina. Okay. How are you? Good to see you, too.
So this year I started being willing to date white women again after a string of really bad experiences. Mm-hmm. One of the issues that was, I guess, that I kept running into a lot was in, one thing is that it's really hard when you're dating someone where you are submerged within their culture. Like, largely, a lot of Black people live within white culture, and so know a lot about the culture, we know a lot about the people, but what I find is that a lot of white people in America can tend to live in their own corners of society where they never have to encounter people like me or understand that, my people aren't a monolith, that we have, so many different type of experiences where we may share a common experience like being So part of that issue that comes up for me is that where I would relate to a person and they don't have any exposure or their exposure is very limited. It's like there is the burden of having to teach this person everything about myself and my culture, mm-hmm. where I would challenge a person to say, you have to take part of this responsibility on yourself. There are many great blogs you can read and things just by Googling to understand, you know, how Black people experience racism in America, mm-hmm. and that my life, you know, I'm dealing with microaggressions and things that I might not tell you about or things that I might want to talk about with my partner, mm-hmm. But can be very difficult if the person needs to sort of defend white people or defend what I, or just challenge what I say about my experience. And so that has been really hard for me, because if I talk about microaggressions and what I might experience in the workplace or in the marketplace, mm-hmm. or in my community, mm-hmm. the thing that I don't need my partner to do is to play devil's advocate.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, totally.
For the person, yeah. Or the experience, yeah. is like, you know, I've been Black for 40 years, and most Black people consider... So, you know, we're brilliant people, we're smart. And so we look at our own experiences, mm-hmm. and we even ask ourselves those questions first, like, is this really happening? Is this person really being discriminatory towards me? Mm-hmm. And so when someone asks you that question that you're trying to be in a relationship with, and like, well, maybe they were just having a bad day, or yeah. maybe they were this, yeah. maybe it's like, right. no.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not mm-hmm. my responsibility to right. assume right. someone else was doing
yeah.
All I know is that I understand particular behaviors. Mm-hmm. I understand that they exist in a particular pattern, and this is my experience. And the only thing I need you to do is really just listen to me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't expect you to do anything about it. I don't yes. expect you to resolve racism.
Yes.
I just want it heard. I want you to understand.
Yes.
My lived experience is very much different.
And Trina, I'm wondering, I mean, that was such a beautifully clear statement that you made about what you need and what's helpful to you. I'm wondering, do you feel like you've been able to make that kind of clear statement and request of any of your white girlfriends?
I have. A lot of times people take it as a personal affront, like, understanding what the difference is between racism and prejudice is really important for me to tell someone, mm-hmm. because white supremacy or racism is just an underlying system that has been created before any of us were here. And mm-hmm. so people don't understand how these things run through our current, through our thoughts. And mm-hmm. so you may do something that you know, comes from the society you live in, you have no idea why you think this way about mm-hmm. it.
Right, mm-hmm. right, well, yeah.
Explain it. Yeah, that's racism. I'm not calling you a racist, but I'm saying, well, that's racism. That's how it operates. Mm-hmm. That's how it moves. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But prejudice is completely different. When I try to talk to, you know, with my the people that I'm trying to get to know in this way, it's like, no, you're talking about me. You think all white people are bad.
Right.
And so then it becomes right. about mm-hmm. and sort of patting the person up, making them feel better versus just being able to hear about my experience
yeah. without feeling like. Yeah. And so I think what's really important about, I mean, we talked about the various skills about the dismantling stories, is that the mm-hmm. people that you were dating, it was incumbent upon them to dismantle that story. Right? Because that's a story, the story that, you know, that's a story that you're, how can I put this? You know, we basically, there needs to be, they need to approach you with like a willingness, a curiosity. It's like, oh, wow, that's that you're experiencing that. Wow. Let me hear more about that. What's that like for you? And not a, oh, you're saying that just because whatever, right? I mean, just not a defensive response, whether it's defending, you know, defense on the behalf of white people or defense just, oh, you're talking about me, you know, you're so
So basically, yeah. That you need to be able to look for somebody who is, who really has the skills that we're talking about in Conscious Girlfriend, so that she's willing to look at what comes up for her and speak from a place of vulnerability about it, and you're willing to look at what comes up for you and speak from a place of, right. of vulnerability right. and clarity about it.
Yeah, because I think, you know, number one, I totally am, I mean, I agree with you totally that we're not, it's not our responsibility to educate our white girlfriends about racism.
And yet at the same time, it is all of our responsibility in a sense to educate whoever our girlfriend is about us. You know, so both of those things are true at once, because yeah. even if you're with somebody else who's black, she'll have a different experience. She'll be from a different, you know, microculture, even just the culture of the family, right? And so so both are true at once. I mean, when you're mm-hmm. talking about systematic stuff, I think it's great if you can say to somebody, hey, you know, it would be really helpful to me if you would, you know, educate yourself. There's a couple of great books mm-hmm. or whatever, because there's some of my experience that isn't just about me. That's mm-hmm. about these huge cultural systems that are in place. But then some of it is also that whoever you're with, you are going to have to educate her about you and how specific things affect you.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny because I think that there, it's a little subtle, because when I think about, because I don't think about me educating you or you educating me.
Mm-hmm.
I think about me learning about you. Mm-hmm. And you learning about me.
Yeah, yeah.
So, okay. I think it's a little bit of it's a little bit of a different twist. And I think that in some ways that's, I mean, you know, you can learn a lot about my own experience by listening to me, by mm-hmm. hearing mm-hmm. what's happening for me in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And you take that in and you
right,
pay
but
attention
I
to
can't,
it.
But I can't learn unless you're willing to tell me.
This is true.
I mean, they're both parts of the equation are equally important,
yes.
that we do have yeah. to be willing to share, and the other person has to be willing to listen
exactly.
With curiosity.
I think what's been missing in a lot of the experiences I've had is the unwillingness of the other person to really listen
yes.
and
yes.
understand that. You know, there could be anything. Like, if I'm talking to a person who lives in a wheelchair 24 hours a day, there's nothing that I have that can relate to that experience that I know of. Mm-hmm. And so my only job, I feel, in that moment is to just really listen mm-hmm. to
absolutely
to also be mindful of the questions that I ask, to really, you know, think about them first sometimes. Mm-hmm. But I think in a situation like that, the compassion is for me can be easier to give, where the person just is willing to listen mm-hmm. and ask me questions
mm-hmm.
and go and think about some things before, you know, saying, well, have you thought about this, or have you thought about that, or whatever. It's like, I don't expect you, or I really am not hoping that you're going to, you know, pose scenarios to me and things like that. It's just like,
right.
no, I'm telling you about.
Right.
And Trina, this is the response that you're talking about is a common response that people give when they feel scared or overwhelmed. And I was just having a conversation like that with my mother last week, where she was giving me those kinds of responses, like, have you thought about this or that? They were completely not relevant. I mean, I was talking about health issues that I've read, like, you know, 10 books about, and she like Googled for 5 minutes and she's saying, have you thought about this? You know?
Yeah.
So it can happen between people of any race, you know,
right.
But I really hear your frustration. Mm-hmm. And I think the challenge might be, you know, because you've had difficult experiences in the past, if you date somebody white in the future, the challenge might be for you to just come to her. It's like, okay, who is this person?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
without the whole baggage load from before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do get triggered very easily when it comes to that, because it's like, it's really hard to, the thing is that this is my humanity that mm-hmm. I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And so to explain my humanity to another person and try to break that down for them because they don't know much about it, one is very difficult. The mm-hmm. other, sharing your experiences. And, you know, when a lot of Black people that I talk to or on social media, whatever, when we talk about our experiences, it's really hard for, you know, a lot of, and I'm generalizing, it's really hard for a lot of white people to hear it and to accept that, yeah, things are this way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we are also living, you know, in very, like I always say, I live in a different America than you do. We mm-hmm. do not live in America. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't, you know, I'm not blaming you for anything. I just want you to understand that concept and that mm-hmm. reality mm-hmm. and know that if I leave a store and I'm upset because the person didn't want to service me or they were looking at me like, why am I even in there? Like, trust the Black person who tells you yes. that you understand that look, like, why are you in this neighborhood or why mm-hmm. are you in this store? Right. I live in a really upscale neighborhood and yep. community. People often look at me like, do you live in this building? Why are you here?
Right.
Things like that. So I have to deal with that in my daily life. Mm-hmm. So I, for me, the challenge is having the abundance of compassion and willingness, because the other person is saying, oh, well, you have to understand that people are innocent. They don't mean these things. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, but you know, the well of capacity of what I have, I'm having to dole this out every day.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I feel defeated in that. Whereas mm-hmm. if you may encounter that situation occasionally, you may feel you have more compassion to give or understanding mm-hmm. or just let something slide. But if I'm having these microaggressions in my daily life, mm-hmm. it's a challenge for me to be understanding of people's ignorance. Sometimes I'm just like, yeah. no, I don't want to deal with it. Yeah. I don't want to beat them. You know, I don't want to think about it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm wondering yeah. how you would respond to this from what you were saying earlier about getting to your own vulnerability and the self-love mm-hmm. piece that I've heard yeah. you speak about in relation
yeah.
to this.
So it's a good question. Yeah, I think one thing that I've learned a lot is, and it's taken me some time, is, you know, we do get triggered by you know, somebody you know, treats, you know, is rude to me or, you know, I remember, when was this, a few weeks ago, I was in an elevator and somebody kind of, you know, backed up from me in the elevator, you know, and I was sort of surprised by my own reaction to it because I don't usually respond to those things, but I got sort of like, you know, and what I've learned is that when I turn the compassion to myself constantly, that actually softens me and allows me to be more open and more vulnerable because there's a strength there. There's a strength that I'm developing. I'm developing my self-compassion muscles, and that as I develop those self-compassion muscles, I'm actually stronger. And so when those things happen, they don't affect me as much, and I feel like I can be more open. And so if it's a situation with somebody that I know or that somebody I love, that because I've spent a lot of time being self-compassionate and building self-love, I can actually be more vulnerable about that, about issues of race with people that I know and love that I haven't been able, you know, in the past. In the past, I mostly just shut down or didn't want to talk about it. And so that process of having compassion for other people is fabulous and important, but it's really important to our first sort of priority is actually compassion for ourselves. And the more we direct compassion to ourselves, the more that we develop that muscle of self-compassion and self-love, the stronger we can be. And the more we are able to handle and tolerate those things that happen to us every day. And again, this is not to say that means that you should date somebody who's going to, you know, kind of say to you, oh, that wasn't that, that's, you know, I mean, totally not. Right. But it does make it easier for me to live in the world that we live in because I've spent so much time on the self-compassion piece. I'll send you a link, actually, Trina, because I don't think you took the self-love class, but there's a little thing that I made for women of color and self-love that I'll send you. But it's just basically about that process of becoming more compassionate toward myself and being stronger in my love for myself as a great, amazing human being, no matter who I am, has made it so much easier for me to be open and vulnerable in the face of and dealing with issues of race and racism and that kind of stuff, microaggressions and that kind of thing. So that's just something to think about. But again, I mean, I would say that, you know, I mean, I remember one particular date I had with a woman before I met Ruth, a white woman. And it was sort of like, there was a way in which I knew that she was clueless and was also not going to be able to talk about it in a way that was like curious and open. And I was like, no. not going to date this person, you know? So, you know, I think when you're dating, to get a sense of that from somebody. And again, the truth is that person probably wasn't really going to be able to have conversations about other things too. You were going to run into that, that issue, that defensiveness, that not being able to tolerate her fear, with other things later. You know, it might have come up earlier around issues of your experience with your experience in the world, but it would have come up later about something else.
And I want to say to the white women listening, you know, I think what Michelle is talking about the vulnerability and the openness and the curiosity, it's so key for, you know, wherever you are on any side of this particular divide, which is such a painful divide. You know, because what I was hearing, Trina, that was the most painful for you was feeling your experience be dismissed. And you know, it's so important for all of us to learn how not to dismiss somebody else's experience. Mm-hmm. And you know, I know from one conversation that Michelle and I once had where I think I was doing some of that. And then I kind of caught myself. She was talking about, it was when you were talking about feeling like you couldn't find a place in the world for yourself as a black science fiction writer.
Oh, uh-huh.
Because she felt like her science fiction, you know, wasn't black enough for the black science fiction, but it was, you know, too black for the non-black science fiction.
Right, something like that. Yeah.
And, you know, I realized a little way into the conversation that I was kind of challenging her, like, is that really true that there's no place for you? And then I kind of caught myself and realized it's because I didn't want it to be true, because the thought of that being true was really painful to me and really sad to me. And so then when I could catch myself, I could talk a lot more honestly about, wow, this is actually just making me feel really sad. And, you know, of course it was making her feel sad too. And then we could get to, again, that vulnerable feeling level without it having to be more like, well, you know your experience and I'm contradicting it and then we're on different sides. And when we can get to our vulnerability, that's when we sort of dive underneath and we can be connected again. And then I realized what I'm doing and apologized.
I intend on taking the 12-week roadmap class at some point. And so one of my, an early request might be how to bring up these subjects when I, you know, because I don't know when to talk about it. And I don't know how to, you know, broach the subject because, you know, I appreciate someone seeing me, you know, for myself, but you know, I've had a lot of experience with someone is like, well, I don't see you as black. I just see you as a person. Yeah, but the world sees me as black and it's okay to see me as black. It's not okay to treat me poorly because of it. So I want you to see me as black.
Well, it's back to that Pat Parker quote, you know, the first thing to do is forget that I'm black. And the second, you must never forget that I'm black. I mean, it's, you know, and so I think that, And that's often, you know, I do think that sometimes when people say, oh, well, I don't see you as black. You know, I mean, that is
it's actually a very insulting thing to say, really.
It is very insulting.
But I think underneath it is that when we are close to somebody, we aren't, that particular difference is not foremost in our minds, right, hopefully, when we're in a state of trust. So, but I think that it does require that kind of complex weaving in and out of, like, you know, Michelle is just Michelle in all of her uniqueness. And then when she's talking about certain things or having certain experiences, it's, you know, her blackness is much more a part of that than other times.
Yeah.
But I think that's a great, great question, Trina, about, you know, to talk specifically in the roadmap about how and when you have these kinds of conversations in the dating process.
Yeah, that is great.
And, you know, what you're looking out for as you're assessing people.
Yeah.
And Judith raised her hand, and I just wanted to also, because it was such a good segue, I wanted to say that we are starting another roadmap class. Most of you on the call probably know about the roadmap. Some of you have just finished the roadmap, in fact, and some of you are about to take it. But it's our 12-week online class, and it kind of goes through, in 12 weeks, gives you a lot of opportunity to really develop all the skills that we're talking about, all the, you know, self-befriending and compassion skills, all of the clean communication, you know, coming from vulnerability skills, and then the dating skills.
Yeah, dating skills, you know, relationship vision, and then dating communication. How, what do you talk about? How do you talk about it early on? And
how do you assess compatibility? How do you spot red flags and find out if they're really red, and then do what you need to do, or you know, or find out if they turn more green.
Right.
So the next roadmap class starts May 23rd.
And actually, I was going to put the link in the chat.
Oh, okay. So for anybody that wants to sign up, the link is now going into the chat, and it's consciousgirlfriend.com/roadmap. And, oh, it looks like somebody wrote a very impassioned comment up there in the chat. Shanna said, Latrina, I love what you're saying. Systemized racism is everywhere, especially when white people think they are being helpful. Your experience is not about that person. Anyone who feels the need to defend or play devil's advocate is under the spell of white privilege. May you find a loving, open woman who does not live in the bubble of the dominant culture. A lovely blessing.
That's great. Thanks, Trina. So, Judith, you had a question. I will.
Well, really, kind of a response to Katrina, if I could. One thing that Trina. Keep in mind, and it, and it was the chat that you just read, you know, living in the bubble of the dominant culture. Well, one place I think we come in common is all of us as lesbians have experienced some, you know, someone saying, well, I don't think of you as a lesbian. Or, and all of us have experienced, I see that heterosexism when somebody says, are you married? And you know that they're asking, do you have a, are you married to someone of the opposite sex?
Right.
You know, or, oh, I'm not prejudiced against gay people. And you know, or I didn't see anybody act in a prejudiced way against you because you're a lesbian. And, you know, we all know as lesbians that stuff is real. And it's just, it's the same dynamic if, you know, when you're black or whatever, whenever you're in an oppressed group, you see the system and the ism coming at you that the people in the dominant group, part of the way the oppression operates is it makes us blind. And, you know, so as a white person, I know that the system of racism intends and survives by trying to make me blind to the racism that's happening around me. And I feel it's my responsibility to A, make, you know, take those blinders off as much as possible, and B, when I'm with my black friend, if she is feeling that uncomfortable because she feels that there's racism, there's a racist reaction to her or a threatening situation because of her race that we might find ourselves in, I told her, because she came to visit me, and my state is very white. And I said, you know, if you're feeling uncomfortable somewhere, you feel like there's some racism, you're feeling unsafe, or unsafe for any reason for that matter, just tell me we need to leave and explain to me when we get out to the car, you know, when we're in our own space. You don't have to explain until after we're out of that situation. That didn't happen this week, but I think I feel it's important. Mm-hmm. And I'd ask the same of a heterosexual friend, you know, around gay stuff, gay oppression.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Judith.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what I hear and what you're saying is that you're really wanting to honor her experience rather than challenge it, which sounds like what Trina was talking about too.
Honoring all of our experiences. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think Lucia, did you have a question? Let me unmute you. Okay, go ahead. Oh, we're dueling and muting again. Go ahead. You unmute yourself.
Go ahead, Lucia.
We can't hear you. You're unmuted, but we can't hear you.
Maybe you can chat your question.
Yeah, you can chat your question.
Since we can't hear you. Okay. Any other questions or comments anybody would like to make?
Kind of winding down here.
Okay. Sarah says, I love what one of my anthropology professors used to say in his introductory anthropology class. Every one of us is like all people, is like some people, and is unique to ourselves.
Right. Yes.
That's a good thought for us to carry as a seed within us as we date and encounter others every day.
Yeah.
We're all like all people, like some people, and unique.
Yes.
Yeah, that is very nice.
That is really great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And my hope is that, you know, we can find ways to keep on having these kinds of conversations and diving underneath the surface so that we can really get to what's true, so that we can love ourselves better and love each other better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Any other questions or comments, or did Lucia chat her? I guess she didn't chat her question. Okay.
Maybe she's chatting. Are you chatting your question, Lucia?
So, and we also wanted you to know that we have Conscious Girlfriend Summer Camp coming up, actually. A few of you that are on the call tonight are actually signed up already for it. And we have a wonderful group coming this year, and we only have 4 spaces left. So if any of you are interested in one of those spots, if it has your name on it, it'd be a good time to jump on it soon. And we actually also have a special combo offer for people who want to sign up for the roadmap and come to the retreat. We give you actually more than 50% off the roadmap when you sign up for the retreat.
I have a link for that.
So Michelle is busy trying to chat all these things to you. Okay.
All right.
Yeah. So those are all ways to continue the conversation with greater depth.
Yeah.
Did we ever get Lucia's question?
No, we didn't ever get Lucia's question.
Okay.
What's going on? Not sure what happened, but
sorry about that.
Sorry
Lucia.
About that, Lucia. I don't know why we couldn't hear you.
Anybody have any final?
I have a comment.
Go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to say that for me, I think one of the ways that I initiate or participate in getting to know someone, regardless of the relationship, is just allowing things to come organic, as opposed to, well, what do you do this and how do you do that? Now, are you married? Are you this? Are you that? Are you something else? You know, it's just let it come up as it comes up. I mean, that works for me. And not saying that that'll necessarily work for, you know, everyone, or nothing works for all the people all the time. But for me, that's the way that I really don't feel any pressure. I'm not placing any pressure on myself
to disclose everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's as it comes in, as it comes up in conversation, and you know, and then it drops. And so that's just how I do it. And of course, I meet all kinds of people who just are an open book instantly, and that's cool. And I can be with that. And but I just don't feel any pressure to meet that, because that's kind of not my way.
Well, if what you're doing,
so that's just my experience.
If what you're doing works for you, we're totally in favor of you doing it. You know, I think we might tend to urge a little bit more, not necessarily systematic, but you know, certainly deliberate approach early on in the dating process to kind of ensure that this person has a similar vision, relationship vision to yours, a similar set of skills for being able to carry out that vision, or a similar level of commitment to developing the skills. And the reason why we urge that is because we hear from women a lot, like that they don't want to spend, you know, several months getting to know somebody, getting emotionally involved, and then find out that there's some huge thing that, you know, really renders the two of them incompatible. But if you if you don't feel that kind of sense of time pressure, and you're fine with just kind of seeing how things move organically, and you know, as long as you know the kind of information that you need to find out before going deeper, whatever that looks like for you, whether it's before becoming sexual or before becoming committed,
right?
I mean, whatever way you go,
All
power to you.
Yeah, thanks. Well, I was just sharing, and appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, I mean, I think people definitely do have different approaches, and I think the question has it worked, and does it work, and I do know that for some people, they are very much, you know, it's sort of like, did you want to let things unfold as they unfold, and they're not. They don't want to, you know, sort of tell everything all at once or learn everything all at once. And I think if it works, it's fine. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I mean, it's not as though, you know, as that just kind of continues to happen, there may be a point in the conversation, you know, but it'll come in the moment that it does. And so then there it is. Well, I did. And, you know, disclosure happens. And yeah. So, yeah, I understand also the needing to kind of continue as it begins to form, because it's formless in the beginning, and then it starts to take a shape, maybe, and you know, and that all is, you know, it happens, it unfolds continually. So it's kind of I think the human experience.
Yeah, and I think what's important is that the shape that it takes is a shape that you want. It doesn't end up taking
of course.
That you don't want, you know. Yes. So as long as it's taking the shape that you want, then that's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
But it sounds like you feel pretty able, like you're aware of making conscious choices about where to go in conversations. And you know, one thing that we hear a lot from women, you know, they're dating somebody and they have all kinds of questions, and they'll come to us with those questions. Like, well, what does it mean when she did this? Or, you know, what is this? You know, she's this way. And so what does that mean for the future? And so, you know, in that situation, we always want to empower the person to find the way to go back and ask.
Right.
You know, because we can't say what it means that she did this, you know.
Right. Yeah.
So being able to ask the questions that come up for you when you want to ask them is important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and sometimes it's a step of bravery, you know,
absolutely.
Because maybe it is a vulnerable spot.
Definitely.
But it's a vulnerable spot, and I want to participate. I want to answer. And disclose because you know conditions are favorable.
That's great.
Yeah.
It is bravery sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It scares me, but no, I'm going for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, dating does take vulnerability and bravery, absolutely. But the truth is that life is full of fear. You know, I think that most people have fear of dating. We have fear of relationships, and we have fear of being alone.
Sure.
We actually don't get to get away from fear. You know, it doesn't seem to be one of the options that's handed out. You know, so that's why part of why we try to teach tools to
handle. Yeah.
To befriend fear, to be able to tolerate and work with fear when it comes up in your body, you know, not have to make default choices mm-hmm. just coming out of fear, but be able to work with it more skillfully.
Right. Yeah. Great.
All right. So, we have come to the end of our time. It was great to spend this time with you, and thank you for those who shared their questions and comments. It was really rich conversation. So
yeah, I feel like I wish I'd gotten to hear more from more of you, because I see a lot of people sitting there quietly. But, you know, we will always find ways to continue these conversations on other teleclasses and
yes.
other events. And so we're just glad that you're here and glad you're showing up. And we will see you soon.
Yeah, we have a couple more teleclasses coming up, which you'll hear about. And
We're going to have teleclasses on May 11th and May 18th.
Yeah, so we'll see you. So hopefully we'll see you soon. All right.
Okay, good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.